On this episode, we explore the ins and outs of thyroid disease, starting with, where the heck is the thyroid gland? We interview an expert in thyroid disease to learn more and then discuss the aeromedical implications, all on this episode of the Mayo Clinic Clear Approach Podcast, your home for aerospace medicine that matters.
Version of the podcast. I'm Mitch Nelson.
And I'm Clay Cole, your medical co-pilots, coming to you from Mayo Clinic in Rochester, Minnesota, where the pattern is clear, the wings are all level, and the AMEs are all above average.
This week, we focus on thyroid disease. Do you know anyone with thyroid disease? And where is the thyroid gland anyway?
The thyroid. Well, that's a gland that's right around the front of the throat area, resting just below the larynx that we know as the Adam's apple. It comprises two lobes that lie on either side of the windpipe, and this gland secretes hormones to regulate many metabolic processes like growth and, well, energy expenditure. In fact, my sister-in-law had a thyroid nodule and had it taken out, and there's lots of folks with thyroid disease, some with mild or no symptoms at all, and others with significant problems.
Data from the American Thyroid Association estimates that 20 million Americans have some form of thyroid disease, and more than half of these people are completely unaware of this condition.
Yeah, you know, and today we connect with an endocrinologist who's an expert in thyroid disease. Let's learn a little about this, well, mystery gland, and then go over aeromedical certification details.
With me today is Dr. John Morris. Many of us here on the Mayo Clinic campus know that you've been the prior chair of the Division of Endocrinology and a lead in our thyroid disorders clinic for a number of years. However, we understand you recently retired. So how's that transition to the other side of the gurney going for you?
Thank you for inviting me. I'm delighted to be here. And you're right, I did recently retire after 38 years of endocrinology, and also part of my career was in medical oncology here at Mayo Clinic. I've been retired about 3 months now, and I guess I would say it's a pretty good job. I've enjoyed it tremendously. My wife also is retired. We've used this time, which is winter here in Minnesota, to seek some warmer weather and have been traveling quite a bit and have another nice trip coming up in a couple of weeks. So I would say the retirement thing so far so good.
To destinations a little bit warmer, is that someplace you take your airplane with?
So we've spent a couple of weeks in Hawaii, which is a little out of the range of my V-tail bonanza. And we flew commercial to Utah and Nevada for some hiking there. But the flying season is quickly coming around for us, so I'm looking forward to spending a little more time out there.
You know, today we're talking about the thyroid. Can you tell us more about where it's located and, you know, what does the thyroid do for us?
It's a, you know, common question. It's the thyroid, I think, for a lot of persons, even providers sometimes, is a bit of a black box. It's a small organ, a small gland, about the size of your two thumbs, that sits in the front part of your neck, very low in the neck, adjacent to and kind of wrapping around your trachea, just above the sternum. It's what we call an endocrine gland, meaning it produces a hormone or hormones rather than a substance that it secretes into the GI tract, for example, like other organs. This hormone from the thyroid we call thyroid hormone. It's a fairly simple molecule. We abbreviate it T4. It's called thyroxin. It's a derivative of an amino acid, tyrosine, and thereby a pretty simple molecule, as opposed to some other hormones like insulin or the pituitary hormones, which are much larger globular proteins. So thyroid hormone can be replaced, can be synthesized very easily, can be swallowed as a tablet rather than needed to be injected. And fortunately, the thyroid gland, its purpose really only is to produce thyroid hormone. And so we can replace the function of the thyroid very easily, at least for the great, great majority of persons, with just a little tablet of thyroid hormone that they take once a day.
So if my doctor diagnoses a thyroid disorder and I need to be on thyroid replacement, how should I have a blood test to check for the thyroid levels? You'd mentioned the T4.
Yeah, we measure the function of the thyroid with blood tests. Of course, there can be signs and symptoms of thyroid dysfunction, and the way we confirm that the thyroid is not functioning normally is by measuring the hormone levels in the bloodstream. We can measure the hormone from the thyroid called T4. There's another hormone that's secreted somewhat less from the thyroid called T3, so we can measure the levels of those in the bloodstream as a direct measure of the function of the thyroid. But there's another hormone that we measure more commonly that is actually a better reflector of the function of the thyroid for most persons. And that's actually a pituitary gland hormone that we call TSH. The thyroid gland is under the control of the pituitary gland. The thyroid does what the pituitary tells it to do. And the pituitary does that by monitoring the level of thyroid hormone in the bloodstream, and then sending a message to the thyroid to tell it what to do. That message is a hormone called TSH, thyroid stimulating hormone, that is secreted by this little gland in the middle of your head into the bloodstream, and it then approaches the thyroid gland through the bloodstream and stimulates the thyroid gland to function. And interestingly enough, measuring the level of TSH in the bloodstream is a better measurement of the function of the thyroid, because the TSH level goes up and down much more exponentially, to a much greater degree than do the levels of T4 and T3 in the bloodstream. So even a very minor change in the T4 and T3 levels in the bloodstream results in a very large change in the TSH level. So it's a much more sensitive measure of what the thyroid hormone levels are over time.
And what are the ideal levels of the TSH that a pilot would be shooting for?
Normal TSH levels are really between about 1 and 4 or 1 and 5 in that ballpark. You can have very minor abnormalities in the TSH level that are not really terribly important, that don't lead to symptoms or problems. So there's a little bit of leeway in the TSH levels as we are adjusting the dose of thyroid hormone or making decisions about treatment of the thyroid. So generally, a TSH below 10 is a pretty acceptable level. Most persons will not have symptoms or complications or problems related to abnormal levels of thyroid hormone in their bloodstream if the TSH is below 10.
We recently had a pilot that contacted us with Hashimoto's, and I believe that causes high thyroid levels. Can you tell us more about that?
Yeah, so Hashimoto's disease or Hashimoto's thyroiditis is another name for the most common disease of the thyroid that's probably better named autoimmune thyroid disease. Hashimoto was a Japanese pathologist who first described what it looks like under a microscope 100 years ago. We still use that word, but it's probably better to think of it as autoimmune thyroid disease, a condition in which the immune system is attacking the thyroid gland, and that attack on the thyroid gland can sometimes cause it to become a bit swollen or enlarged, and over time it can injure the thyroid to the point that it's no longer able to function properly, hypothyroidism, so that the thyroid hormone levels in the bloodstream start to go down, and as they go down, it can start to cause symptoms such as tiredness, feeling cold, more sleepy than usual, maybe a little bit of weight gain, some muscle cramps, dry skin, dry hair, things of that nature. So when we see those symptoms or when we're screening for thyroid function, we measure that hormone level called TSH. And as the thyroid hormone levels go down, as the thyroid stops functioning properly and the thyroid hormone levels start to go down, T4 and T3, the pituitary notices that, and it raises the TSH level in order to stimulate the thyroid to work harder. But of course, the thyroid's diseased and can't do that if you have Hashimoto's disease. So the sign of hypothyroidism, which can be due to Hashimoto's thyroiditis, is an elevated TSH. That TSH starts to climb outside the normal range. And if it reaches an appropriate height, and especially if there's symptoms, then we would make a decision to begin treatment of the hypothyroidism with thyroid hormone replacement.
A couple of months ago, we saw a pilot from Alaska flying for a major cargo carrier, and unfortunately, he developed a pulmonary embolism, a blood clot on the lung. When they were doing a CT scan to diagnose the clots, they saw a thyroid nodule as an incidental finding. He ended up having thyroid cancer. How frequently do these nodules occur? And if someone is noted to have a thyroid nodule, is that something that is an emergency, or how do we best deal with the thyroid nodule?
Yes, it's a very common scenario nowadays. We have all these wonderful imaging technologies like CAT scans and ultrasounds and MRIs and PET scans that we apply for all sorts of things, and they help us diagnose and treat all sorts of disorders. But sometimes we find things that we didn't expect or necessarily even want to find. And one of those common things to find incidentally on these imaging technologies are nodules in the thyroid.
Mm-hmm.
Many people have lumps or nodules in their thyroid. And in fact, if you look really carefully at the thyroid with an ultrasound exam, which is the most sensitive way of examining the thyroid, you can find small nodules in more than 50% of people by the time they reach age 50. So if you have a reason to have a CAT scan of your chest, like a pulmonary embolism or a car wreck or something like that, it's very common to find a lump or two in the thyroid as an incidental finding. Most thyroid nodules, especially those that are found incidentally like that, are just little benign lumps that we call benign thyroid nodules that for the most part sit there and do nothing. They most typically do not affect the function of the thyroid, and most typically they are not cancer of the thyroid. It is, of course, possible to have cancer of the thyroid, and that's always what we think about when we find a lump there, or a lump anywhere else in the body for that matter. But most of these lumps are not cancers. They're certainly not an emergency. Unless there's some pain or respiratory symptom associated with a large nodule there, these nodules are certainly not an emergency and can be evaluated as an outpatient without any need for emergent intervention. It's important to monitor the function of the thyroid. Very occasionally, one can affect the function of the thyroid, but it's not terribly common. And of course, we, depending upon the nature of the nodule, the way it looks on the imaging, especially ultrasound of the thyroid, and how big it is, we might decide to examine it further, even with a little needle biopsy to determine what the risk of cancer being present is. But most of these nodules are not cancer. And even if they are, thyroid cancer is not an aggressive form of cancer, except for some very rare forms. Most thyroid cancers are very, very slow-growing. Indolent is the term we like to use. And so even if there is a small thyroid cancer there, it's something that can be managed in a non-emergent setting.
Recently, we also evaluated another pilot that was presented with cardiac atrial fibrillation, or AFib. He was eventually diagnosed with an overactive thyroid gland, and he was given radiation for treatment. Is thyroid disease commonly associated with AFib?
What you're referring to is a condition that we would call hyperthyroidism, an overactive thyroid. The thyroid gland, for a number of possible reasons, may produce too much thyroid hormone so that those T4 and T3 levels in the bloodstream become elevated. The important thing about the thyroid hormone levels in the bloodstream is to have the right amount, not too much and not too little. If you have too little, it causes those symptoms of hypothyroidism that we mentioned a few minutes ago. If you have too much thyroid hormone, it causes symptoms that are somewhat the opposite, that we call hyperthyroidism. So instead of feeling tired, you may feel more anxious than normal and sleep poorly. You may notice a tremor of the hands or fingers. You may feel hot and lose weight, and it can affect your heart. It can increase the resting heart rate, and especially if the hyperthyroidism is longstanding and perhaps more than just mild, it can induce cardiac dysrhythmias, most commonly atrial fibrillation. So hyperthyroidism is a very well-recognized cause of atrial fibrillation. Fortunately, it's a reversible cause of atrial fibrillation. We have very effective ways of treating hyperthyroidism and can bring those thyroid hormone levels back down to normal. And when we do that, if the hyperthyroidism was indeed the cause of the atrial fibrillation typically goes away. Or the person can have a cardioversion to put the heart back into regular rhythm, and then it doesn't recur as long as the hyperthyroidism is properly controlled.
Dr. Morris, thank you for joining us today on the Mayo Clinic Clear Approach podcast.
Thank you. I'm happy to be helpful any way that I can. I do have a number of patients in my, former practice that are pilots, and I always enjoyed visiting with them and talking about flying, as well as helping them with thyroid problems and diabetes.
Well, it's nice to have a physician that is also a pilot that can speak to these very important topics.
As a pilot, how difficult will it be for you to obtain or maintain a medical certificate if you're diagnosed with thyroid disease? The answer is that it depends on whether or not you have any current symptoms and what your thyroid blood levels show now. For the vast majority of pilots, qualification will be possible under conditions AMEs can issue, otherwise known as CACI qualification. In this case, your treating physician simply needs to document that your condition is stable without signs or symptoms such as significant fatigue or mental status impairment or any symptoms related to pulmonary, cardiac, or visual symptoms coming from thyroid disease. Even if you are taking thyroid supplementation using medications such as levothyroxine, as long as the thyroid stimulating hormone or TSH level is less than 10 milli-international units per liter, then, as long as there are no other medications or other conditions in play, your AME can simply document stable thyroid disease, and you leave the office with a certificate. Actually, the only time that an AME is required to defer a medical application is if you, as the pilot, are symptomatic or have a TSH level greater than or equal to 10. In that case, a current clinical progress note, meaning within 90 days prior to your flight physical, is all that is needed from your treating provider. You would be eligible for a special issuance authorization otherwise. In the event of a thyroid nodule that ends up being cancerous, for most pilots, simply standing down for a short period of time after treatment, such as thyroid surgery, and obtaining a status report from the treating endocrinologist or surgeon, combined with current laboratory data, will allow the pilot to fly again. For thyroid cancers, imaging studies to rule out metastatic spread of thyroid cancer and sometimes special lab tests such as thyroglobulin levels may be required. However, for most pilots, they're back in the saddle and able to fly within a few weeks after definitive treatment. So, although seemingly hidden in anonymity in the neck, the thyroid gland, given appropriate medical care, would rarely, if ever, cause a condition that would result in your medical certificate ever being denied. Thanks for joining us on the podcast today, and we look forward to having you join us on future episodes. Remember that if you encounter a health-related question pertaining to your Aero medical certification, you can reach our Clear Approach website at clearapproach.mayoclinic.org for an online consultation. And send your comments and suggestions for future podcasts to clearapproach@mayo.edu. Soft landings, and make it a great day.